Bruce Pratt here celebrating his birthday because, you know, it's...
What you do on your birthday?
That's where people want to be, is here on downtown.
That's right.
For your birthday celebration. A happy one to you.
Thank you, sir.
You don't look a day older.
I try not to. You know, the funny thing is, about 15 years ago, I stopped feeling older. And my wife said it's because you haven't matured.
Well, there's that, yeah.
So, you know.
I mean, there's also, you reach a point where, how much older can you feel?
Right, exactly. Exactly. Well, I felt a lot younger in some ways when I was reading this book. Crazy how sports are sabotaging American schools. And I thought what I'd do is, rather than try and summarize this entire book, which would be a very difficult thing to do, I just want to talk about the key points of two of the chapters, which really have to do with high school sports, because what goes on after that in college is really, that was the problem first, and it's drifted down into schools. Mm. It's not that high schools have somehow started something the NCAA embraced. It's slid back down. And what's really interesting about this book is there's not a lot of new information in terms of, we know what's wrong with high school sports. I mean, we've talked about it on this show. A lot of people don't agree, but we know what's wrong with high school sports. But what's interesting are the things we think we believe about high school sports, which may or may not be true. That really rocked me in this book. Take one. If you go to many colleges and universities and you look by GPA by department, one of the departments, two of the departments that'll have low cumulative GPAs will be business and education. And now the business people will tell you that's because their classes are really hard. And the education people will tell you that it's because there are certain classes that are very difficult. But here's the truth. If you start out as a physics major and you have a D average for 2 years and you transfer into business, you carry that with you. And business and education programs become places where students who have not done well in other areas will tend to go. So you can look at those GPAs and you don't know from the GPA why the GPA is the way it is. Well, here's the other thing we believe in and we know is true. Student athletes tend to have a higher GPA than students at large, than the student body at large. But athletics may have nothing whatsoever to do with that. We tend to believe it's because they're more disciplined, they're better at time management. It may be that smarter kids gravitate to being on sports teams, and that kids who cannot compete because they don't have the right grades are not figured in with that.
And I would absolutely agree with you, and it goes, I think, even beyond intelligence in a lot of cases to motivation. Mm-hmm. The motivation that is required of someone to be a successful athlete is the same motivation you need to get your work done and take care of business in the classroom. And those who don't have it in one area of their lives rarely have it in another.
Exactly. And the other thing they point out, this is really interesting. Students with the highest standardized scores, test scores, SATs and ACTs, compete in athletics far less than they do in other extracurricular activities. Okay, but that also means if they are probably the smartest kids in the school, right? So if you take them out of the equation, right, if you take this small percentage out of the equation, it changes everything. So we have this myth somehow that sports, we know how they can help a community bond together. We know all the good things. We also know all the bad things, how the boosters can get out of control, how the fact is that the football team will wear their jerseys to school on Friday and the cheerleaders will dress in their outfits. But the person who's performing that night in a school play doesn't show up in costume, right? We don't value their physical presence in the same way the physical presence that athletes provide in high school. And many, many, many of the egregious things they talk about in this book are not common in Maine. We do not have people raising $1.5 million to build football stadiums for their schools. We don't have boosters raising hundreds of thousands of dollars to send all the cheerleaders to a private cheerleading camp. We don't have this in Maine. We don't have the population to do it. But B, high school sports here that are that popular in the community are not as many.
Right.
Basketball, clearly number one, right? I mean, we see that at tournament time. Football, number two. How many towns bond over their track team? I coached track a long time. You know, a few places like Scarborough.
I think there are some places where soccer is a sport that brings the community
together. I was
going
to say, when it comes to track, I would say Brewer, Scarborough, and York at different times. Track's been a big deal because they've been really good at it, right? cross country for certain schools, but it's the spectator sports, and it's the way the schools use the spectators, and they and that sort of is an indication of your school spirit. There are football stadiums in Texas which hold more people than the town.
But there are some bad things about high school sport that have made their way from around the country to Maine, and most of them have to do with the behavior of adults, and that's the fact that we're in a near crisis when it comes to finding qualified officials in virtually every sport in the state of Maine, and harder to find coaches, particularly the vanishing coach that also works in the school as an educator.
Absolutely, and they talk about he talks about that in the book too, and a prime example of that is, look, 20 years ago, the Penobscot Valley Conference skiing championships were a big deal. We would go up to Greenville. Hamden would have maybe 70 people. Baps would have maybe 40. Lincoln had a team. Stearns had a team. All kinds of teams. Lee Academy had a team. And the competition would be for two full days. And it was you know, really good stuff. They don't even have skiing now in the conference. Why? Because, A, you can't get any ski coaches. And especially not any ski coaches that work at the school, because if your stipend for a ski coach is $2,500 and they're going to give up every Saturday for all these months and all these afternoons, you got to find someone that can afford to do that. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't have a teacher whose day could extend to do that, you run out of coaches. And as more and more schools have fewer coaches that are real pros, who fills the void?
Parents.
Yeah, and very often, why are parents a bad choice? Well, as someone who has been a coach of his children, I can tell you, you cannot win.
It's one of two things. I see less of the first one. Either you favor your own children. Right. I don't see that much.
Almost
often,
never.
It's the other side that your own children are penalized because they're playing for dad or mom.
Right. And the other thing that they really point out is that more and more schools, you know, because of budget cuts, don't have a third basketball team, don't have a third football team, whatever. If you get cut from one of those two teams, everybody says, well, you're bad, you don't get to play. But you got to remember something. Half the kids that made the team are never going to play either. Right. And you and I have talked about this on the air a lot, that a participation model, an intramural model versus a PE model, would make a big difference.
Well, and that's why when you talk about schools that don't have second and third teams, I would make the case that attempt to, in some ways, become more like the rec programs where everybody's on a team has ultimately hurt middle school and high school sports, because everybody's an athlete now and everything's been watered down. You also need to find more coaches, and that coaching pool gets more and more shallow. I said it when I was athletic director at the middle school in Brewer. I don't think we need B teams in middle school athletics. I'm not a fan of freshman teams at the high school level. They can play other sports. They can do other things. They can play in other programs that take everybody. If we're going to have competitive athletics at those levels, then let's go one way or the other. Don't try to have the best of both worlds and put everybody on a team and call them competitive. Have your varsity programs, maybe one sub-varsity team, have one middle school team, and then everybody else, if the school wants to put money into athletics, put it into true intramurals where everybody plays.
Right, and I can remember Dick Soucy, who was the phys ed teacher at BAPS for 271 years, as he once said to me, used to say, an intramural program that replaces your freshman teams and all this, he says, where everybody plays will do much more down the line for the quality of your sports teams than anything else, because kids will have fun playing. And you and I have talked about this. Kids drop out at 14 from playing competitive sports. I didn't make the travel team. You know, I would say that the AAU, and I would say that soccer and hockey and lacrosse particularly, where they want to play these things year-round, hockey, basketball, and lacrosse, what I meant to say, soccer too, has done more to destroy kids. Just throw the ball out all summer. Let them play whatever they want to play. Have your regular sports seasons. But don't decide the success of your community and your school is based on the success of your sports teams.
And it's It's in every school, but especially here in Maine. What should the purpose be of high school sports? We are not producing a whole lot of elite athletes, very few pros coming out of the state of Maine, not a tremendous number of Division I athletes, and most of them who go that route get there not because of what they did on their high school team, but what they did on their travel team, their AAU team, their summer camp. And so what is the purpose of high school sports? Is it part of your educational program? If it is, then everybody on that team better have a good, positive experience. And if it's not, let's not spend the money.
Yeah, and I think another thing that you just brought up, look at the people from Maine that have gone to the Olympics. They are primarily not the product of high school sports. In skiing, they went to CVA or Gould. Mm-hmm. If they were swimmers, they participated in year-round AAU. So they may have been swimmers for their high school, but they had to sell their life essentially out because you're not going to be make the Olympics in swimming unless you do that. So when we look at the purpose of high school sports, and I agree with this idea that we're helping kids get into college is the biggest lie under the sun. The kids who get into college have a genetic advantage on yes. most people, and they have that, and they have a certain kind of drive and the like, and they are not coming from small rural high schools throughout most of the country. Even in Kentucky or Indiana, where basketball is huge, they have problems with the really rural schools being just giving up everything else just to focus on basketball. It's time we got back to just playing. I went to a school that had 225 kids. It was a private boarding school. We had four football teams, three tackle and one that wasn't. And the rec football team was for guys who just wanted to go out and play touch football in the afternoon and have a lot of fun. They didn't feel diminished. They didn't feel like they didn't count. They didn't feel like they were unimportant. But if we continue to glorify the varsity athlete the way we do in our schools, we're just taking so much away from so many other things.
And how do high schools, who are always dealing with smaller budgets year in and year out, how do they compete with the AAU and the travel programs that offer travel, not just around the state, but around the region, around the country, in some cases around the world? Why are we even trying to compete with them? Because we've reached a point in the last decade or so among elite athletes where the high school team is not the big thing for them. It's certainly not the honor that it used to be, which for many kids was the peak of yeah. their athletic career. And now, well, I hope I can squeeze it in between my intergalactic championship that I'm playing as a 14-year-old or worse, an 8-year-old.
Right. And here's some interesting numbers in here. In Texas, there are high schools that spend 3 times as much money per football player as they do per, and get ready for this, mathematics student.
Well, of course. Yeah.
If the average cost to educate someone in a math class is $631, the average cost to have someone on a football team in Texas, $1,980 per student, and they have average 60, that's $80,000 per just for to put the kids on the field. That's insane.
Well, we've seen this right where I work in recent years. You want to get people to come to your school board meeting, threaten to eliminate a sport.
Yeah, exactly.
Cut an English teacher, ain't nobody. Crickets.
Nobody cares.
No. Yeah. Hey, I want to keep talking about this. Let's take a little break. It's 4:47. We'll come back and talk more about the book Sports Crazy. It's Sports Lit 101, Z62 Retro Radio.
I started singing bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the
we're back on downtown, a little extended play here of Sports Lit 101, talking about the book Sports Crazy. And we were talking during the break about things that trickle down from college to high school, and part of that is the level of commitment required of athletes at the high school level. I remember a coach telling me, you know, when I was coaching back in the 60s and 70s, he said commitment started on the first day of tryouts and ended with our last game, and that was it. And now we have over time asked athletes first to give up their regular school vacations to play, depending on the time of year, to play in Christmas tournaments, and of course the high school tournament in the month of February, and then preseason games in the
next
month
week
of April.
There will be track and baseball games.
Oh yes, but now it's extended into summer, where if you are, I would say, talented enough, but now everybody's a three-sport athlete,
right,
which is another subject that I get riled about. But what happens to your summer now? because everybody's got a summer program in every sport, and there's no time for a high school athlete to be a kid, to have a job, to have friends, or best of all, to hang out and do nothing, which should be a big chunk of your summer.
Absolutely.
But we've killed summer for high school athletes.
Yeah, and it's interesting because when it shows how sports has corrupted that, you know where else that's leaked into? Music. And kids being told, if you don't go to band camp in the summer, you won't be able to be in the concert choir, you won't be able to be in the more elite musical groups within our school. And they tracked places all over the country where they do that. Places in Texas and in Kentucky where kids were practicing marching band until 10 o'clock on a Wednesday night. Now, no school district here would allow that. I mean, we have rules against that, right? You wouldn't be able to be out four nights a week till 10 o'clock at night practicing marching band.
I bet there are some schools that do that in some of their non-athletic programs.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's so. I mean...
But there are some schools that do it right, too. And I think of our friends down at MDI who have had great success in athletics, but also in their music program and in their theater program. And I know last year when they won the State Drama Festival, they had a parade. When the actors and the crew came back from the State Drama Festival, they were met at the Trenton Bridge, I believe, by police and fire and citizens, and they welcomed them back into town. And so there are places that get that right and that celebrate those who are doing equally challenging and require an equal level of time commitment but are non-athletics.
Right, and I think one of the other things that the book talks about is the way sports has made this phony meritocracy, right? If you weigh 300 pounds and you're 6'6", regardless of your athletic ability, there isn't a football coach in the country not going to look at you, right? Because maybe you're good enough to plug a hole on defense and make it difficult for people. So a lot of times, and we hear this all the time, he's a great athlete. The number of great athletes in any high school at any one time are pretty small.
Yeah, right? And you mentioned DNA, physical skills, and I think back to our conversation from 2 or 3 years ago with David Epstein, his terrific book, The Sports Gene. And what's the single biggest factor in creating terrific athletes? Who their parents were.
Genetics. Absolutely. You know, and I am, you know, I suppose the most incredibly gifted athlete I ever knew in any way, and I did not know him well, I just saw him as his career was building, is Bodie Miller. He could have played any sport he wanted. I think he lost one set in his entire high school career as playing tennis. You know, I mean, so tennis to skiing. But you know, I mean, my younger son played Division I football. You got to be a pretty good athlete to do that, mm-hmm. you know, in FCS level football. But to call him a great athlete, no, he was a good enough athlete to play at a very high level. Sterling Sheffield is a great athlete, right? There are 40 guys on that main football team that are really good athletes who are not great athletes. And we take a kid just because he threw two no-hitters in high school and we turn him into Burley Grimes is, you know, is crazy.
Here's another thing that high schools have started doing, and I'm not a fan of it, and that is because it goes to me counter to what we want to do in high school sports and what we're trying to build. And that's become the yearly tradition of press conferences to announce high school athletes signing with collegiate programs on National Letter of Intent Day.
There are schools that hold assemblies in with the band and parents and cancel classes so that if a student athlete is signing a National Letter of Intent, in one Florida high school where they had 6 or 8 of them, they had an all-day-long assembly
We've got people who are – we've started seeing that in Maine all the time, these press conferences and – why aren't we doing that for the chemistry student and for the kid who's going to go on to become a lawyer or a pharmacist or the kids who do well in the Skills USA competition at UTC who are among the best in the country?
Or the kid who's written a play or a book that gets published and they're only in high school. There's no press conference for that. There's no pep rally for that. It's gotten out of control.
There we go. I want to talk more about this. This was great.
Yeah.
Can we get Steve Overman
I'm going to reach out. I'm going to reach out. It's University of Mississippi, so it's not a press we've had a book from before, but I'm going to reach out and get him on the show because it's some interesting stuff. And I'll leave the book with you, too.
Excellent.
So you can take a look at it.
All right. Thank you, Bruce. It's called Sports Crazy, Stephen J. Overman, the author, here as we wrap up Hour 1.